It's time for the Mr. Sports Show on ESPN 94.7. Call the show now at 330-744-0947. Now, here's your host, Mr. Sports.
Hey, a big thank you to Bill Scudiere, Chuck Geiswhite, on the show today. That was absolutely fabulous. And Tom, we got to thank Tom Sharp serving as my guest co-host today. Arbutus, Durso, that came in as well. And now we're going to get away from music, and we're going to talk sports again, and we're going to talk to Frank Popeo and a cast of thousands. I'm going to have everybody introduce themselves solely. We're going to talk bocce. Yeah. And you were saying that you knew a little bit about bocce.
Oh, yeah, I play a lot.
Are you any good?
Yeah, I mean,
you want to take Popeye on one-on-one? Come on. I want to see this kid.
I'll play him, but I'm not going to say I'm going to win.
All right. So, true story, and I got to get this right off the top. I'm sitting at JR's Pub. I'm having a beer with Pope one day, and two young hockey kids are out playing bocce. They have a bocce court out at JR's Pub, right? And these young guys look exasperated. They just come out. They had a bocce match. I said, what's wrong? He goes, bunch of old people in here, man. He goes, there's no competition for us. I mean, we just smoke these guys out here. And I know Pope's like a pro and everything. And I said, I nudge Pope, and I said, play him. And he goes, and Pope goes to him. He goes, I'll play you guys a game if you want. And he goes, old man, you want to play us? I watched Pope rip these guys. It was over in no time. Pope, that was a sensational memory. Absolutely incredible. Let's start with you, Frankie, real quick. How long have you been playing bocce?
Probably 45 years.
45 years.
Started in Briar Hill.
Wow.
Camp Court in Briar Hill.
Wow. And how much have you perfected your game over the years? Would you say from a five year ago time point to now, like you continue to improve?
I probably, the older you get in this game, I think you get better with the experience part of it. So I think you actually get better when you get older.
Wow. No kidding.
There's some guys in Cleveland that are, they're in their late 70s and they're really tough to beat. So,
and Pope, you were a very good athlete in school. I remember you played basketball, right?
Yes.
And you went to what high school? You don't even remember high school.
I don't want to comment on that because what's going on
where you went
school
to school
right now, I do know.
Well, we already talked about
Ursula.
Okay.
Okay.
That's where I went. So.
Wow. But you were a proud moment for Ursula,
right?
Back in the day.
Right.
At one point, I think you led the Steel Valley Conference
Steel
in scoring.
Valley.
Yeah.
Yes.
Back in, what would this be, the 70s or 80s? 83.
Okay. Yeah.
And now you're playing bocce, and you're an avid golfer.
Yes.
You got it all going on, brother.
Sort of, maybe.
And you do home remodeling and all that
yes.
stuff?
Yeah.
Jeez, you're a jack of all trades.
We got it.
And so we bring in, who do we want to have come up here first?
Rock Delicio. Rock Delicio is actually the manager of the club that we're going to be playing, the OBL League.
Mm-hmm.
The Ohio Bocce League, semi-pro league. He is the manager of Lorenzino's club. And
wow.
he also is a player. So,
yeah, come on up here.
So,
talk to you a little bit. Talk to Tommy and I. We don't mean any harm in anything.
Okay.
A couple things. The Ohio Bocce League, OBL, first semi-pro league.
Correct.
So you guys are excited about 6 teams, Steel Valley Bocce League, Mahoning Valley, Hitmen, and Youngstown Flash. All Youngstown area owners, Copple Gamblers, Western Pennsylvania owner Wycliffe Barbarians, and the Cleveland Hellhounds, Cleveland owners.
And the Steel Valley Bocce Club.
Steel Valley Bocce Club. I think I mentioned that at the beginning. So, like this organization and everything, you guys decide to put all of this together. Whose brainstorming was this?
This was actually the gentleman to my left.
Wow.
Danny Catullo.
Danny Catullo.
He is the commissioner of the league.
Commissioner.
He's the commissioner.
So he has all the power.
He has the power.
Wow. And Danny, are you nice to everybody, or are you like crack the whip as commissioner?
Firm but fair. That's what you got to be. Firm but fair.
Do you ever wield any power and just show them you're the boss out there?
No, I think it's important, like when you have any sort of startup. So I've started up businesses, been an entrepreneur my whole life. You know, learned that from my grandfather who started Catullo Prime Eats
mm-hmm.
in the early 80s as well. It's all about collaboration. You got to work with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't just be one voice. We have to make sure that we're all moving the boat forward. And that's what makes it so exciting with the 6 original owners that we have. They're just like great stewards of the game of bocce, like Bob that's here with us. And then, of course, our players, too. Our goal in the league is really to highlight what we feel is a special game and be able to show it to the masses.
Do you feel like this is something that's going to expand and take off to even a higher degree at this point?
Well, I've been playing for, you know, 25 years. It's called recreationally, competitively only for the last 4 years. And I've really seen just in the last 4 to 5 years the game taken off. So many more leagues, so many more places opening up, so many more people that are playing, from children to women to co-ed leagues to, of course, now much more competitive open play as well. Mm-hmm. We've already seen this little mini explosion, but now what we have is really like this renaissance in sports where there's niche sports like pickleball and cornhole that have made their way to the masses. And it's, we feel like the same could happen with bocce.
I agree. I was watching cornhole on ESPN national TV a couple years ago. I was talking about that, and Alicia's doing like the color analyzing on there, and I work
radio. Wondering why we can't get bocce on here.
I'm telling you,
there's literally out of 52 weekends a year, there are literally 52 weekends worth of tournament paying bocce.
Wow!
Every weekend there's a tournament with thousands of dollars of payouts every week.
So is that the goal, to get to like a big channel and everything? And you think this is a possibility?
I would love to.
Well, I think for us it's really about growing. So let's just say we've been excited that our game has gone from a couple hundred viewers to now thousands of viewers.
Right.
And so we need to get to 100,000.
Okay.
And so with this league, by unifying the rules, by unifying the uniforms, so no longer people wearing t-shirts and shorts, but rather jerseys with their names on the back and a team name, it makes it easier for the public to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so every single one of our games in the Ohio Bocce League will be broadcasted on the Bocce Broadcast Network, which is on YouTube.
Okay.
So it'll be all streamed live. We're going to be able to explain the rules to the people that are watching that have never watched bocce before, yet be strategic enough for those that have played for a long time to be able to understand what's going on and being able to understand the decision-making behind the players. And that's what we love about the sport, is the strategy behind it, too.
And the league's going to start on Monday, September the 29th. Two doubleheaders, 6 and 8 o'clock. It'll last for 10 weeks, and then the playoffs are going to follow after that.
There's decisions on whether to botch a ball or whether to lay up. Those are major decisions.
The captain usually makes the call on that.
Ball. Yeah. Well, I was the commissioner, and Mick Foley sockoed me at the WWE.
I didn't fare too well on the ring.
Well, I think it's what you're talking about with the sport, though, is the strategy behind it. So there is this athletic component, and so you see a lot of former athletes like Frank, like Rock, like Bob, you know, be able to like enjoy playing the sport because it's hand-eye coordination. But there is so much strategy behind it. And it's not just there's the same decision for every team in every moment. You also have to understand, you know, what skill sets do you have on your team?
Right.
So is the person going to pick, you know, that you're going next, are they better at rolling than they are hitting? If you roll on this ball, are you going to be able to beat it 4 times?
Wow.
And that's why, like, you know, Bob has like some strategic decision to making when he was drafting his team. Mm-hmm. He was looking for certain types of players as he was drafting.
Kind of like pool in a way, and it's kind of like bowling in a way. It's like a combination of the two, when to lay up, when to do that, you know.
Definitely agree with that. Yeah. Let's bring out Bobby on for a second. Bobby, get over here, brother.
All right. I'm coming.
The decision maker.
So Bobby, your title, this is your team, right?
Well, Wycliffe Barbarians is my team. Frank is one of my players.
Frankie, who's my brother and everything. So what made you want to have Frank play for your team?
Well, I've watched him for the last couple years, and I got to know him a little bit better. And I know he plays down at Lorenzino's all the time. And, you know, sometimes, you know, every court is not the same. You know, if you're playing on dirt, they can go left, they can go right. They got ridges, they don't have ridges. But these guys play there. So I wanted guys who played there often. And there's a couple guys in my team. I'm from Mentor, Ohio.
Okay.
And a couple guys in my team, like Doug Carter. You know, he's from my territory, so we're always playing on dirt courts for the most part, although Club Molisani has the synthetic courts also. Doug plays there quite a bit, but he's used to both courts.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was a strategy of guys who can not only hit, but be two-way players. They can point and they can hit. Frank is definitely one of those.
Wow. You know, like having seen him play in person, I can attest to how good he is and everything. So, but players, are they paid and everything because it's a semi-pro thing or not? How's that work?
There's an element of that that's...
based on is it performance?
Well, it depends how you do in the league, okay. I guess. Right, Danny?
Right? It's based on prizes and sponsorships as well.
Okay.
So the players are they're contracted, so they're 1099, which is why it's a semi-pro and not necessarily a professional league yet. But really, it's us dipping our toes in the water of it, you know, professionalizing the game. And so, you know, we have prizes. We've already taken on. You know, we're very blessed to say we're over $30,000 worth of sponsorships that we've brought on. You know, and what we're going to be able to do is share that back with the players. So no longer does a player have to go to a tournament, put their own entry fee, and hope to win at the end. Now they're able to play for no money. They don't have to put any of their own money in, but have a chance to be part of accepting those winnings at the end.
Wow. And you had mentioned, Bob, you were talking about like the different surfaces. I mean, how does that affect outcomes of games usually? Does it require different type of play from bocce players?
Well, you know, for instance, you know, I grew up in Wycliffe, who has that big tournament every year, you know, 100 and some teams every year. And they're all dirt courts. There's 9 of them. So there's a little bit of a home field advantage because you know what walls will bank, which walls won't bank, how far will the ball come off the back wall if you hit it, because we don't play dead wall or back wall dead there. We play back wall live. So in other words, you can hit that back wall without hitting anything else, and that ball is going to stay in play. A lot of tournaments with back wall dead, you've got to hit another ball. You've got to hit something, another ball, Paulino, anything.
Okay.
Then if the back wall hits... Then if the ball hits the back wall, it's still in play, okay? So sometimes when you're playing away from home, it's going to take you a few frames to figure it out. And it's really important to watch where your counterpart on the other team is standing, how he's throwing the ball. Yeah. You know, speed, you know, you can control. If you're a good pointer, a good hitter, I mean, you know, especially if you're a good pointer, you can control the speed. It's the breaks you got to be careful of.
Wow, fascinating. My buddy Nick Amendola, I worked in the Greenwood Chevrolet. You guys might know the name.
Yeah.
Really big into bocce. Yeah. Plays all the time out there, crickets. And, you know, just tremendous and always talking to me about it and everything. So you guys had your draft on August the 20th,
right.
I believe.
Right.
But you still have a free agent pool available, too. So there are players that could still be added to the roster.
Yeah, there's a lot of players that are sitting out there that are fantastic players, but there's only 6 teams. And, you know, some of us owners decided that, you know, I wanted to play this year.
Right.
I didn't want to just sit on the sidelines. So I declared that, yeah, I'm going to be a player, so I had to give up a draft choice. So there's one more potential draftee sitting still in the free agent pool. You know,
but like could you sign Tom Sharp as a free agent to play bocce for your team?
I have no
idea. Great point, guy.
We're going to have to play about 5 frames. I'll let you know.
It won't take long.
No, so honestly, you could tell just by looking at a guy, he's got it or he doesn't. It's not what I'm looking for. I mean,
by playing with them.
What's going on in your mind when you're watching somebody?
Well, number one, it was important to me from day one to make sure I got a bunch of guys that could play together. There are some players out there that are difficult to play with.
Okay.
You know, they're very intense. And look, I was one of those idiots, you know, years ago.
Like what, you punch people out and swear at
them?
Well,
no, you don't punch them out.
Scream the echoes at the season.
Why didn't you hit the wall here? I told you to hit here. Well, I didn't do it on purpose.
Where are you throwing that?
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, nobody throws a bad ball on purpose.
That's right. And so nobody wanted to play with these guys. They want to be. You don't want them on your team.
Well, no. It's just, there's this other guys. There's certain guys I wanted from day one. And I started looking at the draft list. And, you know, I had them all kind of highlighted. And there was many that I had highlighted that got picked before my turn came up.
Okay.
Because I set the franchise record for the first trade. I gave up my number 2 for a 5 and a 6.
Oh, no.
Right? Isn't that right? Yeah.
So, again, when you do the draft, what are you looking at? Just film, or you've actually kind of like scouted these guys in person?
Yeah, you just know them. I mean, I've been playing 25 years.
Okay.
So you just know the circuit of this
play. Like you said, there's tournaments every weekend. You get to know these guys.
Wow. Like, Rocco, you're pretty good at bocce then, right?
Yeah, I'm okay.
Are you in Frank's category? Are you in Frank's league?
Yeah, I've beaten Frank before.
You've taken him down.
The last 2 tournaments that we played.
Really?
But anyhow.
So Frank, he admits defeat. He's got a tail between his legs and lifts off and everything.
He didn't say he was a good loser, though.
He's the man at Lorenzino's.
Yeah, I'm the general manager.
He can probably tell you a little bit about the place.
Yeah, let's talk about Lorenzino's a little bit.
Yeah, it's... to me, I mean, I have a lot of loves around the area, club-wise, MVR, St. Anthony's, Mount Carmel, Paso Toronto, you know, all the Youngstown area clubs I played at. But Lorenzino's, to me, is, as Bob mentioned before, Club Molisani up in Cleveland has synthetic courts. We're the only court south of Molisani with synthetic courts. And it's just a different game. It's truer. It might be a little faster. It's cleaner because you're not picking up dirt or limestone or hard true clay.
Nothing worse than holding a dirty bocce ball, my friend.
So you don't have to worry about any of that. And the club itself is pristine. Wow. It's just a beautiful club. 22-seat granite bar.
No
countless
kidding.
TVs. We have three indoor synthetic courts. We play year-round. And synthetic bocce balls are different than regular bocce balls.
Okay.
Like regular bocce balls, the composite is not really playable, pliable on synthetic.
Okay.
Synthetic is more like, has more like a rubber coating to it, and it just, it plays differently. So like the one of the best things about synthetic is you can buy your own balls to your own specs, color-wise, design-wise, whatever you want. Basic bocce balls at the Lake Club, at MVR, wherever, are red and green. That's what you get.
If some people, you know what, we'll get to that when we come back. I want to take, because there's probably a lot of people out there. People know what bocce is, for example. People may have even dabbled in and played, for recreation in the past. But a lot of people don't really understand the game. So I want one of you guys to walk me through that. We're going to take a break. We're back with more right here on ESPN 94.7, talking bocce after this. And we're back. Mr. Sports, my special guest co-host today, Mr. Tommy Sharp, longtime area concert promoter. Had a good time with you, T, today. A lot of fun here. We're talking Ohio Bocce League, OBL, today. And prior to the break, Rocco, you said, Rocco Delisio here with us. You said you wanted to mention somebody?
Yeah, I wanted to give a shout-out to Dante Chiavetti and his wife, Regina, who started Lorenzino's Bocce Club, owns the Bocce Club, put all his own money into it. He got a few, a little bit of help from the city and whatnot to expand the area that he had, and it's inside and out. It's just a top-notch, beautiful club.
How's the food there?
How many courts is it?
The food is fantastic. It's fantastic. It's got three synthetic courts, but he's got. We're opening soon to the public.
Okay.
Takeout. It's a private club. You have to be a member.
Where's it located, by the way?
You know where the Four Seasons flea market is on 422.
Okay.
It's right, that side road is Jacobs Road. It's right down the street on the left.
Wow. Okay, very cool.
Like I said, he's going to be opening to the public soon for takeout. His food's fabulous. He's got everything from pastas to sandwiches, wings, pizzas, and everything's homemade. Everything's homemade.
Which one of you guys want to walk through an amateur? Let's say they dabble in bocce, have no idea what they're doing. Take me through a match in bocce. Danny, you want to come up here and do this?
Yeah, so, you may have played a lot of bocce, recreationally, even in the yard.
Okay.
And it's really the same concept. You're throwing out a Paulino. The little ball.
Yeah,
you're throwing that out first, and let's just say you're going red versus green. If red is closer to the Paulino, it's green's turns to go.
Okay,
and then at the end of the frame, whoever has the most close balls wins the frame, and you could win up to 4 points.
Okay,
and that's like simplistic rules about it.
Exactly.
And what's so beautiful about the game is you could play it as a little kid. And you could play it well into your 80s or 90s, and as long as you can be able to pick up that ball and be able to roll, you can play this game.
Wow!
And then it's such a simple game to play, which makes it so easy to be able to understand.
Danny, can I ask you a question? When you said 80s, 90s, you look. Why is that?
I do have a situation that happened to me, and I want to know what legally this is, because I think they just stuck it to me. I threw out a turn. Somebody, I was getting something. I come back, you're up, Tom. And Nick Morjone gave me that crap, and I threw the ball. And they took 6 points. What is the rule on that after you throw out a turn?
Well, so if let's just say, what I could give you what our league's rule
is going to be. Yeah, just normal,
so,
not...
Yeah, let's just say we're going to have referees that are helping. So they're helping support. But let's just say green was supposed to go, but red went again. That ball is gone. It's too bad. Even if you were a point, you are now conceding that point was actually greens. So you're saying the ball that you had in wasn't actually in. So if you throw the ball, you're basically saying that original ball was not in, and I'm rolling now. There's no points that were given, but it's basically conceding the point.
Tom, you're probably busy on your phone. You missed your turn.
No, I was so mad. We were in the finals, and they stuck me.
So a match, is it a best of three?
Here's how we're going to be playing it. Each individual league game, there's going to be two league games up to 14 points.
Okay.
Okay? And so you're awarded up to three match points.
Okay.
One for each of the games that you can win, and then one for total points. So let's say Popio's playing against Rock's team, and Pope wins 14-12, and then Rock wins 14-12 the second match.
Okay.
We then go to a overtime.
Uh-oh.
So we're going to go two frames, and it's whoever has the most points after two frames is going to be awarded that third point. And we can keep on. It's just like college football. You keep on playing the overtimes until you got a winner.
Somebody breaks
it. And we think that's between, again, how simple the game is so everyone can be able to understand how to play and the easy to go rules. But then there's that strategy side. It's like understanding the personalities. Okay, Frank's missed his last three shots. Is Bob going to pull him, or is he going to put in a new player?
Is
he going to trust Frank to make this big shot to be able to win the game?
Wow.
And so we're going to have that human side, that athletic side that we love so much in sports. And then getting that overtime is just going to add a little bit more to that drama. And that's what we're excited to bring, this version of our sport to the mass.
I want to ask you, Pope, ask you this for a second. Frank Popeil. So, like darts, pool, anything that there's leagues in and everything, you always hear, like, it wasn't my night. I had a bad night. Does that apply to bocce, too?
Where you're just, absolutely.
You're just off?
Absolutely.
Sometimes you can
I've seen some of the best players miss seven shots in a row.
Really?
Just happens. I mean,
and then you get lucky
Do you ever see a quarterback have a bad night in the NFL? It happens in this game. You're not going to be on that night. I mean,
there's little margin for error is what you guys are telling me, essentially.
Yeah.
Now, does it snowball after another? Because I know in baseball, you make an error, comes a ball right.
Again.
Like in bocce, what I found out is once I start pressing, now I'm like, uh-oh, now the ball, I'm kind of trying to put it there, no spin or nothing, and you just start unraveling.
It's almost like golf. You just start thinking,
and you just go.
That's not natural.
An example is my position is usually a second hitter. So that position in the second hitter spot, that means I can roll and I can shoot. So my lead hitter, say he misses five in a row, and our captain of the team will come up and say, hey, let's switch. You go to lead hitter. And then we'll switch in.
Wow.
Mid-game.
Uh-huh.
So it's, you're going to have a bad night. Everyone's going to have a bad night.
I don't know this. Like, you know, you see golfers, like at a big golf event, too. They head to the putting green. They want to test out the greens and everything and see, you know, what it's like. Is it slow? Is it fast and everything? Is that how you guys prep, too, for a given matches?
Yeah. And I think the mental part of it is affected more as a hitter. I'm more of a roller than a hitter. I'm, like Frank was a second hitter.
Okay.
Third roller. I'm more of a second roller, third hitter.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's much more mental, and it's a little more difficult to hit because you're trying to hit, say the ball isn't near the Pauline. You're trying to hit a ball that's basically 4 1/4 inches wide.
Correct.
And if you miss by a 32nd of an inch, you might as well miss by 5 feet.
And then you hit the Pauline.
If you're trying to roll a Pauline a foot to the right and you miss a foot to the left, you're still only a foot away, but that's a 2-foot radius you have to play with. There's no margin for error when you're hitting.
Or you knock
there is
close
a margin for error when,
now
when you're rolling.
Three points.
And that's why hitters, if you miss 2-3 in a row, it starts to get in your head as a hitter.
And just like any other sport, you want to see the ball go through the net. So you want to get or you want to, like, a little dink in baseball. Mm-hmm. You want to dink the ball, get your hit. So sometimes you could, like, just that 32nd of an inch, if it just, like, barely hits the ball, sometimes it's all you need to see as a hitter.
Mm-hmm.
You see the hit, you're like, oh, okay, I heard the ball hit. Now you can start feeling the momentum back. Now I'm back.
Yeah. So when you talk about, you mentioned two interesting terms there, specific terms, roller and hitter. What's the difference between the two?
A roller is mainly, okay, your lead roller, your lead point guy has the Pauline in his hand, or he's the lead roller for the other team. You throw out the Pauline, you try to get as close as possible.
Okay.
The other team's up. If you're really close, they're going to send up their hitter who's going to try to smack the ball out. If you're not very close, they're going to send up their best roller to try to beat your 18-inch point. But if you're 6 inches away, they're going to hit you out.
Like the time I saw Frank play, he was against those two arrogant young guys. He was blasting their balls all over the place. It was funny. They were flying out of there. It was up in JR's pump. It was, wham!
Destroyed and those kids' lives.
No, but he has it. He like technique and everything.
We have the saying, though, you know, you hit for show, but you point for dough.
Oh,
and so hitters are great. You need to hit well. You need to hit consistently. You really have to hit timely shots. But if you want to win this game of bocce, everyone in your team, from your lead pointer to your lead hitter, has to be able to roll.
If you can't roll, you can't win.
When your lead pointer isn't pointing, he's not having a good night, it puts a lot of pressure on everybody. Yes.
Bobby, how many are on a team or are going to play in one particular match? How many guys?
Well, there's seven on the team.
Okay.
Right?
Do they all play?
What's that?
Do they all seven get to participate or just four of those?
Well, you know, we're going to try. I mean, look, driving from Cleveland to Youngstown on a Monday,
right?
You know, if there's going to be five or six guys that I know are going to get in, I'll probably tell, you know, one or two, hey, guys, don't come this week.
Okay.
You know, why make that trip? And if you want to, good. I mean, I'd love to have you there.
Right.
I just want you to know that this is what, you know, may happen. But, you know, you want to get everybody in. You want to give them all their chance. Because do we have a rule that whoever's there has to play, Danny? I forget.
No, so you can get subbed in at any time, which is a little bit different than what you're used to at a tournament when there's only four people per team.
Okay.
And so, like Frank said, your lead hitter's missing. Mm-hmm. You're just switching positions. There's a little bit more pressure in this league. Because now if your lead hitter's missing, there's a backup, you know, kind of like drooling on the bench saying, put me in. So, you know, this puts a lot of pressure on the owner / coach, you know, someone like Bob. He wants to get everybody involved. So he's going to, you know, he's going to be subbing some people into the game, you know, keeping them fresh, keeping them involved.
He's going to go to his bullpen.
But he also wants to win the match. He also wants to win the game.
Exactly.
So it's like, it's a little bit of both, like trying to be able to get everybody to run.
To answer your first question, you only play four at a time.
Okay.
And then three guys on the bench if you have all seven there.
And then you can play four throughout the entire duration of the match, or you could play all seven.
No.
You cannot.
You can only play four at a time. You can sub at any time, but only four guys on a court at any given time.
Okay, that's what I meant. Right. But technically, during a course of a thing, all seven can participate.
Did you guys mention to him that we actually have a player in the league from Canada?
Wow.
Even in our country.
Yeah. Pat Pezzin from Toronto.
Toronto, Canada. Yeah. Pope had told me that. That's extraordinary.
And one of the rules of the league is you have to attend four matches to qualify for playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to come down from Toronto at least four times.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
How long of a drive is it?
Four hours, I think.
Yeah, four and a half, yeah.
Wow. How did he find out about you guys?
Oh, he plays on the circuit.
Okay, so you know this guy.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
And the best, if I could interject something, the best part about this game is the bocce circuit. Like, once I started playing competitively, started playing in Cleveland, Western PA, New York, as far as Dallas, you meet people that you have never would have met in your life that are fabulous people, friends of mine for life. I talk to a lot of these guys every day that I never would have had the chance to meet if it wasn't for the bocce circuit. It's just the best part of it.
Extraordinary. Yeah. And I love what you guys are doing. I need you guys to come back on sometime, okay? Is that all right?
We're in. Yeah.
You're definitely. Right. All great guys, man. Honestly, I learned a lot.
Could you ever do a broadcast from Lorenzino's?
There you go.
You talk to our man, Carl, once you go out there. We have done live broadcast. We've done two from JR's Pub. We did...
We'll get a team together and play.
Kufleitner? Yeah. It's me and Sharper against all you guys. Okay, that's it. We're going to take you down.
So they're eight. In the early days of my career, yes. I owned a business and I had a warehouse that at that time was empty. So we set up boards and screwed them into the floor and went and got some padding and some carpet. And every Wednesday and Thursday night, we would play bocce, have some pizza.
Oh, wow.
And we played, you know, 10:30 at night.
A beverage or two.
Oh, my God. What a blast.
Well, I can't thank you enough. Frank, Rocco, Bob, Danny, thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're coming back with more right here on ESPN 94.7, the Mr. Sports Show. Stick around. And we're back on the Mr. Sports Show. Tom, I got to tell you, I've really enjoyed working with you today. I think it's been a lot of fun. And, I mean, we're down to 20 minutes left on the show. I told you this morning.
I
texted you.
Couldn't believe it. But I do know this. When I was listening yesterday, I missed a couple appointments because I didn't want to
miss.
And I didn't realize how long I was sitting there without, you know, doing what I was supposed to do.
Wow.
And that's how good it was.
Thank you. And you know what? I do want to reiterate that Aaron Murphy, that played Tabitha on Bewitched, she's coming in. Scott Ostalosh has her coming in. It'll be a week from tomorrow. So that will be September the 19th. That'll be at the Rogers Flea Market. I just had so much stuff going on. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm sitting here, it was like a cloud over my head. I couldn't sleep and everything. I knew I was going to get a tooth extracted. So that was on my mind. I was in the clouds yesterday. Hey, you're on the Mr. Sports Show. How are you?
Hey, it's Todd Bartley.
Todd, what is going on, my brother? Nice to hear from you. Todd, I wanted to talk to you and get your thoughts because I respect you. You've been in the media a long time and everything. So Ursuline gets a second civil lawsuit thrown at them. And Warren Harding... And Warren's getting a lot of accolades for this, decides to cancel their game, which we were scheduled to broadcast a week from tomorrow on Friday the 19th. One, do you think Harding did the right thing? Two, stuff's coming out every day about this. Do you think the next logical thing is that Ursuline cancels the entire football campaign?
I think Ursuline can do it on their own, or the OHSA can do it for them. It's really their call.
Yeah.
I think it's coming. I think Fitch moving... homecoming to later in the season in anticipation of probably not playing on the 26th. I think when you look at St. Vincent St. Mary hosting on the 3rd, when you look at Walsh Jesuit potentially coming to Ursuline, and then they close out with Cheney, and then, of course, the Holy War with Mooney. I don't see how they're going to play another game.
Wow. I agree, and I think it's going to – how deep does this get, in your opinion? We have Todd Bartley with us, well-known media personality for many, many years, and obviously a great radio voice. Listen to those pipes. How deep do you think this gets? It's kind of disturbing because I know some of these people. You talk about the coach and everything.
Too.
Then you talk about the principal, the assistant principal. Does it even get to like a Father Murphy or anything? Some have speculated that could be the case.
So here's where I land on this. I've covered a story in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, where we call home the last 15 years. And not being from there, it gave me, you know, very clear eyes on a situation where a very similar fact pattern occurred. And very early on in my investigation of that story, and it's still going on today because there's a federal lawsuit that's going on with the victim that's playing itself out in federal court, what I did very early on was take all of the names out of it, right? You have to you literally have to divorce yourself of all of the names.
Okay, you're looking more at positions or what?
Well, no, you just let the fact pattern develop and what are the facts of the case.
Okay.
And what you come to find out is... in a lot of these situations, and I'm not saying this happened at Ursuline, but it happened in the case that I've covered, is that because of there are so many family ties, you have a principal involved, you have an athletic director involved, you have any number of families that are connected to what has gone on. Well, of course, they're going to have each other's backs and do certain things and not do certain things to protect the program. I'm not saying that's the case at Ursuline, but from what I've read so far, they don't deserve to have a season. And I've heard some people on the show talk about, well, you know, what about little Johnny to put in all the time in the summer work his tail off to be a senior, all that kind of deal. Well, my understanding is they had an opportunity to transfer. Secondly, you had an opportunity to step up and say the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
You chose not to do that. So because you stayed silent, because one of your teammates was assaulted, you don't deserve to play. I don't care who you are. Yeah. I don't care if you're top of the food chain of the family tree or at the bottom. You don't deserve to play.
It's so misfortunate. I had even heard from an inside source that said to me, John, there's 60 guys on the roster. There were 41 in the know, at least, on this. Have you heard anything similar to that?
It's what happens. A perfect example in what we call the Myrtle Beach case, the Williamsport Myrtle Beach case, because they went to Myrtle Beach where this incident happened. There was a meeting. They were told to ditch all their phones. They were told to delete anything that showed that they were ever in Myrtle Beach. John, that shows you that there is a there. Well, if there's 40 of the 60 that are involved, they got a problem. They got a real problem. So what happens is law enforcement in their investigation is going to have to interview 40 kids, potentially. Now you're talking about at least one parent, if not two. So now you're to 120 people because it's 40 times two parents is 80, 120. Now you're getting into coaches, so let's just say 10 coaches, all of their family, then you get in the administration, 5 to 10 of those people. You're to 200 people that need to be talked to about one incident.
Right.
And now there's a second lawsuit that's out there that I read yesterday that there's now bullying, harassing going on of an alleged female student. And, and this is the sickest part of this. And again, these are allegations. The court will play out. The investigation will do what it does. The allegations are so disturbing that you have an administrator talking about, well, we're not going to do this and we're not going to do that. In my humble opinion, law enforcement needs to step in. You cross state line, there's a potential federal side to that where you can bring in a federal agency into that equation because they're kids.
This the girl said that was behind the second lawsuit. She was being sexually assaulted. Again, it's a football player. And she said she, on more than one occasion, I believe, went and asked for help and actually confronted the person that she asked in the administration at Ursuline and said, so you mean you're not going to help me? And again, allegedly, Todd and Tom, the administrator turned to her and said, that's exactly what I'm saying. So if that's true, I mean, that's
one of their best players.
I would argue that person needs to go to jail for failing to report.
Wow. Wow. That's unbelievable.
There are so many statutes in this that you are, as a school employee in Pennsylvania, and my understanding is it's nationally, right? They're mandated reporters. If you even suspect or there's a hint of child abuse going on or any kind of abuse, you call it in.
Right.
You take the chance and go, listen, I heard something. You guys, the investigative team, you guys go look at it. You look into it. You do your thing. Now my hands are out of it. I've done what I'm supposed to do. Right?
Is YPD complicit in any of this from what you've seen?
I don't know yet because I think the investigation is so fresh and because there are so many moving parts, there are so many different jurisdictions, it gets really muddy really, really fast. From my understanding, from the moment that they were told, now again, that can get a little cloudy too, of the when they decided to call and that kind of deal. That'll all come out in the child line reports and FOIAs and everything else that we were talking about earlier, I think earlier this week or late last week. That will all come out in the timeline in these lawsuits because the civil attorneys, and I'm sure you're going to have these guys on, it's called discovery. They're in discovery process. They're going to get all of the criminal records. They're going to get all the investigative materials. That's all going to come out in the civil suits if they go to trial, which I would argue, and I'm not for putting victims on the stand and reliving the nightmare and everything else, but a lot of these cases, sometimes that needs to happen to make it public.
Right.
It really, really does. And you let all of this get aired out in the public.
You know, Luke Schuster was on when we first talked to you not long ago from the MLO brothers. And Luke said, you know, it might look like we're taking some enjoyment on the attack and the attack and the attack here. But in actuality, what we're trying to do is bring the school into light about, you know, what had been going on here and also convince other people that are, you know, lagging behind. I told you, I don't even know if you heard it, Todd, but I had somebody actually reach out to me for help. And I'm like, hon, you got something about her, you know, guys behind her, they were on a football team videotaping her skirt because she was forced to wear a skirt to school as they do at Ursuline. You know, so, you know, the kid had a laptop and following up the stairs and stuff like that. And then you're not allowed to say anything about it. You know they're doing it, but, you know, terrible.
So then she immediately needs to go to either a school resource officer in the school or directly to whatever jurisdiction it is, if it's Mahoney County Sheriff, if it's YPD, if it's Boardman PD, wherever that jurisdiction is. And believe me when I tell you, I'm the guy that called the Myrtle Beach Police Department in the story I'm telling you about from Williamsport High School, and the Myrtle Beach Police Department was floored.
Wow.
They're like, why is a reporter or an investigative journalist calling us and not the school?
Good point. Talk a little bit.
They had a whole investigation. That kid ended up getting charged in South Carolina for what he did. And I think the same fact pattern could play itself out in the Ursuline case. I really do.
And again, just to reiterate, you do expect, certainly at the very least, the next thing that's going to come out is the entire football campaign's wiped out. At this point, do you think other teams will follow Harding's lead and elect not to play against Ursuline as well?
I think Fitch already signaled, hey, guys, in a couple of weeks here, we've already moved our homecoming because we don't want your team to be the attention of our homecoming.
Wow.
I think they've already, and I'm not speaking for Fitch, I'm just saying they sent a very definitive message. I think the teams in October, like I said, St. Vincent, St. Mary, Walsh Jesuit, Cheney, and Mooney, they need to come out right now and say, we're not playing. We're not going to play.
Unbelievable. Hey, Todd, a little bit about your background. Tell the listening public some of the things that you're up to and what you have accomplished in your media career. Because I think you would be a great guest to have on this show and then break some of that down.
So years ago, when you and I met and Carl met, we were all working over at WBBW and Cumulus and the late, great, you know, John Caparanis was a huge influence in my career, just to be able to work with him for a year, like we talked about the last time.
Him and Harry Paytas,
Yeah, I mean, you know, Nick the Vegetable Man, you know what I mean, calling the show. And Harry actually went to college with my dad, so I've been knowing Harry. I mean, he's known me since, you know, the Glean days, as Marty Schottenheimer used to say. You know, there's a Glean, man, there's a Glean.
There was all that. It didn't work. We didn't win the game. Go ahead.
Exactly. You know, I lived through one of your guests' big moments. You know, I lived through the drive. I lived through the fumble and the shot over Craig Elo and all of those. Those were my formative years. Since then, I've been all over the country doing, radio and TV, all the way to Division I level. I've done pro baseball for about a decade. I'm currently doing college stuff now. There's some Division I stuff that I'll be doing this winter and then into the next spring as well. Just been very fortunate to do a lot of games in a lot of places, meet a lot of great people along the way, including yourself and Carl, and make a lot of lifelong friends. We actually welcomed our daughter. We welcomed our daughter into the world.
Congratulations.
When we were there. So, Salem Hospital, you know.
Where are you working at? I mean, where are you living at right now?
So we're in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, but I have some stuff where I've got some stuff in Virginia that I do.
Okay.
We're very fortunate to have the Navy athletics agreement with our station in Annapolis, Maryland. We just extended that for the next 3 years. So when you guys are doing the Army-Navy game, we'll definitely be talking about that. And then I've got great ties. Before I came to Youngstown, I was in North Carolina, out east, and we had great times there, and I've stayed in contact with those guys. One of my best friends from Eastern North Carolina just had a major heart scare. He had, I think it's quadruple bypass and stuff. And he's back to the living, if you will. And just great to see him, you know, out and about. He does games and does shows just like you do. And just, you know, it's stuff like that and the relationships over the years that you build that really make it all worthwhile. And I would argue to anybody that sports is really that tie that binds and gives us a lot of entrance into places that a lot of people don't have.
I agree with that. And I want to tell you, too, bud, it's an honor to call you a friend, and definitely would love to maybe even possibly have you come in the studio someday when we could chat at length a little bit more. That would be terrific.
Yeah, it's funny because I'll be at Geneva Saturday night.
Wow.
Just give you a long story short on my career. This is small world and 7 degrees separation, as I like to call it. Coach DeMarco is retiring at the end of the season, and he's been at Geneva basically since they laid the first, you know, cornerstone with their football program. And he was actually the head football coach at Geneva when I was doing games at Malone back in 96, because I had covered the World Series in 95 when I entered in Cleveland. I was on the air in 97 when, of course, they dropped, you know, both of them.
Florida Marlins.
But in between, you know, we got married in 96. Well, that October, we're playing at Paul Brown Tiger Stadium, and they're just kicking our tail up and down the field. We make this late fourth quarter comeback, and we hit a field goal with 9 seconds to go to win the game. And we had just ended their season the year before in the playoffs. So to see him still there, I'm with a different school. I've got a whole package lined up for him just to see him again and the impact that he's had on lives. And I was talking to our head coach at Shenandoah about it. He was actually a junior in high school in 96 when that game happened. So I did the whole 7 degrees of separation of, man, you caught a pass your junior year in high school. The same Saturday, we were at Paul Brown Tiger Stadium. I'm like, have you seen Paul Brown Tiger Stadium? No, never been there. You need to be there. And it's the old sand turf. Remember before they redid the turf in Maslin?
Yep.
It was that really hard, almost like concrete sand turf.
Exactly.
Since they redid it, and we're playing a college game there on a late Saturday. I mean, it's just so cool, you know, Johnny, just to have those kind of connections, you know, back to the Valley and then be with you guys 7 years after that. It just, you never, in sports, you never know what you're going to get when you prepare for that game and then you go see it on the field. And then to have this other stuff we're talking about happen, That's what breaks my heart about the whole thing.
It is. It's nothing we take any glory or joy in whatsoever. Like I said, I had my own daughter went to Ursuline, my youngest child, and my mom went to school there, and I billions of friends there. Hell, the head coach was on my show on YSN 5 years ago, and so was his assistant, two of the people. So, and his kid worked with me at Youngstown Propane in the warehouse. So it was kind of a touchy thing. And plus, one of my best friends sent six kids through the school system, including one I went to the graduation this past summer. So, and I got to meet a lot of these people that we're speaking about. Anyway, Todd, I am going to be in touch with you, brother. Thank you so much for the phone call and shedding some light on your opinions on Ursuline and that unfortunate situation.
I need to let a very positive cat out of the bag for my longtime friend, Carl, and what you guys are doing. You remember what we did, 20-something years ago back at BBW.
Yes.
You remember that very vividly, right? I mean, mm-hmm. We had Salem and West Branch same day. What Carl's doing, what you're trying to do, we're literally trying to put Humpty Dumpty back together from 20-plus years ago.
That's what Tom Sharp
said. I said that.
Yep, that
radio used to be.
I mean, it's exactly where it's going to go. And, I mean, if you remember 20-something years ago,
mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody was listening to the station. Everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's just that is where ESPN 94.7 is going to end up going, for sure.
Todd, coming from you, that means a lot, brother. Hey, have a great day. I'm going to be in touch with you. That's Todd Bartley. Boy, he agrees exactly with you.
That's exactly what I said.
I like putting Humpty Dumpty back together again because corporate's ruined it.
It has.
They ruined it, Tom.
And everybody's gone to, satellite radio. This is what it used to be. People wasn't sure what was going to happen on a day-to-day basis on some of the stations.
Hey, we got to take a break here. Carl's will be like, it's 12:56. All right, we're coming back after this. Hey, that was good words from Tom Bartley, though, huh?
Yes, it was.
Right. All right, we are back. Mr. Sports Tom Sharp agreeing to be my co-host. Carl Bloom, jump on one of those mics over there real quick. We only have a couple minutes. Rich Eisen is coming your way at the top of the hour, and he'll preview tonight's Thursday night football game between the Commanders and the Green Bay Packers, which can be heard right here on ESPN 94.7. Kickoff time, 8:15. But Todd Bartley saying some really good things that Tom Sharp totally agrees with, which is has to make you feel good, bud.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's been a long road, but we're slowly getting there.
And again,
we're done with the computerized same.
Yep.
It's not even radio anymore.
I think it's about, and that was like Tom's thing. He's been telling me this for years. There's a void. And even the shows that had existed, they kind of lie there. I dare anybody to go up and down the dial right now, or even over the last 3 hours, and show me what was better than what was on this show today.
Yeah,
please, tell me.
It was so busy in here today. I love seeing the office busy.
And anything can happen, and it will.
Absolutely. What do you think, Tommy, you're involved with advertising a lot. Again, we only have about a minute here left. Why do you think it is so difficult for local businesses to pull the trigger on advertising? Because now this is a well-known commodity. It's been running solid for five consecutive months. Why is it so difficult?
What they do is they put a lot of belief in social media and ROL, what they're getting back in return. You have to give them something. Right now what they have, they don't believe is a marketable thing to use their money on. So they're going to use X amount of dollars in some form to get them where they need to go.
Wow.
And I think this show is easy to sponsor.
I think even though it's about sports, and again, our time's running really short, it's a variety show. It's like an old
throwback
morning show.
But look on TV, every channel I turn, they're talking about the same NFL. I mean, hours and hours and hours of the same thing over and over again. So sports, believe me, people want to hear about it.
Absolutely. You agree?
Have a great day, everybody.
All right. Thanks. That's from the man himself. Tom, thank you so much.
The kingpin, Carl Bloom.
Stay tuned for Rich Eisen. He's coming up next.